Are the Chiefs the only thing people are talking about this week? Well, we found some other things, from politics to personalities to protests. It's the week of the big workplace dilemma. Thousands of federal workers in the metro are told, leave or be fired. Mayor Lucas delivers his State of the City address. And Dayton Moore for Kansas governor?
Week in Review is made possible through the generous support of Dave and Jamie Cummings, Bob and Marlise Gourley, the Courtney S. Turner Charitable Trust, John H. Mize, and Bank of America N.A. co-trustees. The Francis Family Foundation, through the discretionary fund of David and Janice Francis. And by viewers like you. Thank you.
Hello and welcome, I'm Nick Haynes. We are taking you on a whirlwind journey this week through the most impactful, confusing, and most talked about stories around our metro. Hopping on board the Week in Review bus with us this week is Yvette Walker, who leads your Kansas City Star editorial board. From the primetime anchor desk at KNBC 9 News, Chris Katz. Pete Mundo tracks the week's big stories behind a microphone at 95.7 FM KCMO Talk Radio. And former Star reporter and editorial writer Dave Helling is with us. And what is a super week in Kansas City? We're going no soon enough whether history is going to be made here. Can the Chiefs do the unthinkable, win three back-to-back Super Bowls, a feat never achieved before? We can talk a lot about politics on this program, but is that the biggest story in town this week, Pete?
Of course it is. I mean, you talk to business owners as well. It's a huge week for them. You talk to a lot of restaurateurs, they'll say up until Valentine's Day, it was a pretty dead time of year. And now they've got a ton of Chiefs business. It's good for the economy, and it is the story in Kansas City.
Yvette, as one of the top people with our Kansas City Star, I was shocked we were able to get you this week. I was expecting you to be in New Orleans in a skybox of some kind. What happened?
Well, we're not in NOLA, but I have to say Dave Helley and I did something pretty fun this week. We were able to collab with Philly writers about which city is better, which quarterback is better. We had a lot of fun. So we're not in New Orleans, but check that out if you haven't had a chance to see that.
I'm assuming we also have the best Philly shake sandwiches right here in Kansas City. Actually, my favorite Super Bowl story comes from you, Chris. It was a previous Super Bowl. You were going through Miami Airport, and a man starts running after you, shouting, Michael Mahoney, we love you.
I get that a lot. It is the biggest story of the week. It's maybe the biggest story of the year, and the television stations in Kansas City have responded accordingly. I will just tell you, we have, as we sit here recording this program, we have 13 people in New Orleans right now and adding two more this weekend.
Yeah, it's been thin on the ground here in Kansas City.
Yes.
But we have lots of other things to report, Dave, including the fact that if the Chiefs beat the Philadelphia Eagles on Sunday, expect the victory party to look a whole lot different in Kansas City. Multiple sources now confirm there will be no public rally after gun violence disrupted last year's event, and even the proposed parade route is being modified to minimize security risks. How will the parade be different, Dave?
Well, I think there'll be more security around to make sure that they don't have a repeat of the incident a year ago. And my guess is, it's just a guess, Nick, that there will be fewer people attending. Because I do think, while all of the observations here are 100% accurate, you do get just the hint of Kansas Cityans becoming a bit blasé about their team in the Super Bowl, you know, that, oh, third time in a row, do I need to throw another party or go out and buy more chips and more guacamole for the neighborhood.
I also think, too, it's interesting if the reporting on this has been accurate, and there's no reason to believe it hasn't been. The parade route itself will gather by Union Station and will travel north, away from Union Station,
yeah.
I think, in an attempt to try to minimize those crowds and kind of take the steam out of any sort of a public gathering, as we've seen in the past.
Does that make sense to do that, given what happened last year at this time when we had the parade and the violence that took place and what we've seen since then, including in New Orleans?
Yeah. You know, I don't know if the change of the parade route is going to make that big of a difference. But I think it's interesting that at least people, our leaders, are realizing we've got to do something different. We cannot just do the same thing all over again.
And I see that not only is there going to be, as Dave pointed out, a lot more security police there at, if they win, Pete, but that route will be moving, as the mayor says, a lot faster than it has done before. They're going to get on buses at Crown Center, allegedly, and then moved to 6th Street, a very different route than they've done before.
well, you kind of spread people out if you just have a parade route. There's no mass gathering. We had a lot of people who would call our show last year and say last year in particular was a special kind of mess, whether that's because of alcohol, excitement, whatever. But you had people running down the parade route to get to the rally point at the finish. This allows them to finish, hop on 70, and probably just head back to Arrowhead. And it gives the Chiefs a lot more control. I don't think you'll see players jumping off of buses, high-fiving, you know, bottles to the face. Yep. There was a lot of that last year. That was frankly out of control and would have been the story had the tragedy not overtaken that.
I did see on the Channel 9 weather forecast, Chris Ketz, that Tuesday and Wednesday, though, snow showers in the forecast. Do we know what day it would actually take place if they do indeed win?
It might be a little bit later in the week. I think you might be looking at Wednesday or Thursday, possibly, but weather could also be a factor in terms of turnout.
And I was thinking, Dave, when you say about, you know, we've become blasé, we've done it so many times, will some schools say, you know, we're not going to be closing on
Super Bowl? Well, I think each district is making a different decision. One of the things to keep in mind, Nick, is that the leagues require these parades or celebrations to take place relatively quickly after the game. So that it's not strung out over 2 weeks later or whatever. So that's why that planning has to be take place now and why everybody is getting ready for whatever they assume is going to happen on Sunday.
Now, speaking of sports, Royals owner John Sherman has finally broken his silence. Nearly a year after voters rejected a tax that would have funded a new downtown ballpark, during the team's annual Royals rally event at Kauffman Stadium, Sherman says the club hopes to have some certainty about future stadium plans by mid-year. Hopes to have some sort of certainty by mid-year. There's a lot of conditional language. Could he have been less specific?
Oh, no. And that is the problem. We've been talking so long that we need specifics. There needs to be more transparency. How can we make really decisions, and the voters are probably going to be left out of it this time around, but still, how can we be happy or comfortable about a decision that we just don't know anything about?
It changes if the Royals wait until mid-year to make their opinions known. It changes the posture of both state legislatures, which will be out of session by that point, which means that they may be pointing to 2026 as the year of action.
But if it was June or July, would that still allow something to be on the ballot in August?
No. You've got to be 60 days before August. So, and again, there is some idea that maybe they could do this without a ballot. I think what's happening, Nick, I don't have any reporting, but it's just a guess. The owners of the Royals and the Chiefs, for that matter, are finally figuring out that this is one expensive project and that there is, you know, billions of dollars are involved. And in a community of our size, building one such facility is always going to be a heavy lift. Building two or refurbishing one and building another is an enormous undertaking, and I think they're just trying to figure out how to make all the numbers end up at the bottom.
And the new stadiums that are out there right now, they're starting at $2 billion.
No. Was there any news from John Sherman, or was he simply just kicking the can further down the road, Pete?
Well, I think he's got to say something at some point. I mean, like you said, we're almost 12 months from the vote.
That's the first time we heard from him.
And it's better he gets ahead of it now. You know, spring training's a couple weeks away, if that. So people are wondering what's next. And also, he's got a moment here to take advantage of. They're coming off a run to the playoffs for the first time in almost a decade. He's got some goodwill behind this team and the entire franchise. So now's the time to strike while the iron's hot. But it doesn't look like that's going to happen.
And they've also blown through deadlines in the past. So it's not out of the realm of possibility that that can happen again.
Isn't it also possible they don't know what they want to do? I mean, that was the problem a year ago in April. They weren't completely clear on what they wanted to do.
Which is a little scary to think about, given how where we are.
Yeah, and now a year later, they still don't know. I'm not sure the Chiefs know. The Chiefs have sort of said, well, maybe out by the Legends, no, maybe we'll refurbish our stadium. I'm not sure the teams know precisely what they want to do. That's what the legislators and politicians will tell you, that they need to know what the teams are asking, and they don't have that information yet.
But will the winner, after Sunday, will we begin to hear more talk about this? Chiefs are going to win, I'm confident.
Oh, wow.
Let's just say.
We'll replay the tape next week.
That's right, yeah.
A bill in Missouri that would pay citizens a $1,000 bounty to turn in undocumented workers and families brought Kansas Cityans out onto the streets this week to protest.
Anybody who's here illegally or even like with a visa but scared that they're going to be sent back, that's exactly who we're here for.
Well, these are scenes from the Country Club Plaza. In addition, many Mexican restaurants in the metro shuttered their doors to protest the measure. But just because something is proposed doesn't mean it's going anywhere. Didn't the new Speaker of the Missouri House, Dave, John Patterson, say this week its chances of passage is slim to none?
Right, and if he says that, he's probably accurate, as he's the Speaker of the House. I do think that there will be other efforts on the immigration front, frankly, in both Kansas and Missouri this year at the legislative level. It's very performative. You know, the important work is being done with the Immigration Service, of course, and then the debate over birthright citizenship, which is a real thing and will be decided in the courts.
It's interesting, though, Pete, in the Missouri legislature, you've got a Missouri governor, bigger majorities of Republicans in the House and Senate, but yet that bill was considered a bridge too far?
Well, because of what Dave said, it's largely performative. You get, you know, especially some new people in there want to make a name for themselves. They want to introduce a bill. And trust me, they'll reach out to me. Hey, talk to me about this bill I introduced. Well, if there's a 0% chance of it passing, why would I waste my listeners' time with that? But that's what it is. I think it's a lot of attention seeking, and it's largely held and taken care of at the federal level.
Yeah, if you go on social media, you see all sorts of reports and things that are said. Many of them walked back and canceled and deleted right afterwards. But have we seen any specific action in Kansas City with regards to any immigration policy, whether it be at the state or federal level at this time?
Well, last week and maybe even the week before that, we began to hear so many calls about ICE.
Yeah.
And coming into KCK in particular. And, you know, it was difficult to find whether or not that actually happened.
Yeah.
But the fear is there. There's so much fear in these neighborhoods. And so I just think that we just have to continue to protect, as you know, our citizenry here, because we're here in Kansas City, and there are beautiful people here, and they are doing good work here. And I hate the fact that they're so fearful.
And in fact, when I come into work every day, as somebody who came from Britain, I do wear a fake mustache and glasses as I try to get in.
Still recognizable, though.
Immigration families aren't the only ones running scared this week. Thousands of federal workers in Kansas City have been told to return to work this week or prepare to be fired. They were given a Thursday deadline by the Trump administration. Many federal employees continue to work from home nearly 5 years after stay-at-home orders were put in place at the start of the COVID pandemic. Workers have been told if they resign this week, they'll be paid through the end of September. If they don't, they risk being fired. We've been hearing from a lot of federal workers this week right here at the station, including one who says they changed their party affiliation from Democrat to Independent to try and avoid being purged, as they call it.
And as we record this program, the deadline of whether to accept or decline these offers is hitting. So far, the reporting seems to indicate maybe as many as 40,000 federal workers nationwide may go ahead and take the deal. The exact numbers, we don't know. And like the issue of birthright citizenship, this is also another issue that is and will be hashed out in the courts.
If you wipe out big sections of the federal workforce, it will undoubtedly have an impact on the way people live their lives. For example, there was a lot of hand-wringing last week over the plane crash over the Potomac and let's hire more air traffic controllers. Well, you're just wiping out the federal service except for air traffic controllers? I mean, how about food inspectors? I mean, there are OSHA and people who come into the workplaces so that folks don't get hurt. So it'll have an impact. Now, just a couple of things. The exact details of the separation's recommendation are not clear. There, you know, we'll pay you maybe through September, but maybe the Congress won't allocate the money. There, you talk about the unease, Yvette, among the immigrant community. Federal workers are on at pins and needles as well.
Well, there's $36 trillion in debt. There's a $1.8 trillion deficit. This is how the private business operates all the time. I mean, we're in media outlets that have all shrunk in recent years. If you can't make your budget, you got to make cuts. If it's the government, we're insistent that somehow the world's going to end.
Well, yeah.
I'm not
will there be a lot of pushback, though, if there starts to be, you know, you have to cancel your vacation because you couldn't get your passport in time?
Well, you got to work ahead of time. I don't know what to tell you. I mean, you know, it's not easy to get a passport right now. And something tells me that when you find the fat through DOGE across the federal government, it's not going to be the guy that's issuing you your passport. And we're starting to see some of that come out in recent days. I just think that slimming down is what private business does when you can't meet your budget, and why should we not expect our government to do the same thing with our tax dollars?
I don't think that there's anyone that would not say that there's a certain level of red tape and bureaucracy in the federal government. But what I'm not seeing, I'm seeing trigger. I'm seeing not a lot of plan. What's going to happen? It's happening too fast, and I don't think there's really any transparency about once these government agencies are slimmed down or maybe closed altogether, what the plan is to take care of what they were doing in the first place.
And the other thing to keep in mind is it's all being done by someone in the private sector who's not elected to any office, and the Congress has been written out completely of any decision-making. You know, you can eliminate departments, it happens all the time, but you go to Congress and say, hey, how about if you vote on this, and then proceed. But this has been done in a very dictatorial way. It frightens a lot of people, and the first time someone dies of food poisoning or dies in the workplace, folks are going to say, well, what happened to everybody? And they're going to find out the reality.
Well, before boarding a plane for New Orleans for the big game, Kansas City Mayor Quinton Lucas delivered his State of the City address from City Hall. This is supposed to be the time the mayor delivers his vision for the next year, but it's also a time to reflect on what he has done in leading our metro's largest city over the last year. Can he declare, Pete, that the state of the city is good?
Well, the timing of the speech is interesting. It tells me he doesn't really have any interest in Kansas Citians watching it, to be honest, because he's doing it the Thursday before the Super Bowl when there's a ton of hype around this game that will largely overshadow his speech. I think he can claim the city feels good, and it's largely because of things he doesn't control, like the Chiefs. But listen, homicides did come down last year. He can point to that. And there's a lot of people that would say right now the city's in a good place. He got reelected by a wide margin with really no contender. So he can make that claim partially because of things out of his control.
Chris, given what has happened this week, though, is it advisable for the mayor to stay clear of saying we've made progress when it comes to crime? We just had over the weekend three women dead in a triple homicide. The murder count, by the way, is now at 18. It was just five at this time last year. And we've also surpassed where we were in 2023, which recorded the highest number of homicides in Kansas City history.
I think there are an awful lot of people in this city who don't feel safe for a variety of reasons. And I think it's not that they feel that City Hall isn't aware of the problem, but that City Hall is incapable of addressing it in a positive way. And these are issues, obviously, societal in many different ways and perhaps out of the reach of government anyway. But I think there's a fundamental concern in this city that I haven't seen in an awful long time.
Yvette, is crime the mayor's biggest weakness?
I think so. I mean, we're already talking about the fact that there's not going to be a rally. We're already talking about the fact that people are concerned about safety in what should be a celebratory event. I think that still tells the story right there.
Dave, I mean, it's easy. In this program, we often focus on problems. What has he done well?
I think Kansas City does show some signs of progress. We're going to open the streetcar extension. At least some people see that as progress. I think they're working on housing and doing a little bit better in that regard. But let's be frank, Nick, the most forgotten event in Kansas City politics every year is the State of the City address. I mean, it's literally forgotten 24 hours after it's delivered. Early in my career, it didn't exist as a thing. You know, when Dick Berkeley was mayor, you didn't even have State of the City, and then Emmanuel Cleaver, well, pomp and circumstance. So, but one other quick note on crime, however, with the mayor. Remember, it's a state-controlled police department, and to blame him or the council for crime alone is inaccurate.
Now, the mayor may have a great opportunity to win over a big friend this weekend, because I see that President Trump is going to be the first sitting president to be at the Super Bowl. Is that an opportunity for Quinton Lucas to win him over, possibly coming back with a huge bucket of cash for Kansas City?
No, I don't think that's going to happen. I think it's more likely that Taylor Swift and Donald Trump have some great kumbaya moment. But, you know, listen, I think right now for Quinton Lucas, and we've talked a lot about this, just nationally, his party is in a very unpopular place, arguably the most unpopular it's been in a very long time. Quinnipiac had a poll that had the party 26 points underwater. I know that stuff ebbs and flows, but I think he actually is somebody who is willing to engage in conversations across the aisle. He does a good job of it. And if he's part of that solution for his own party going forward, it could be interesting to see how it develops.
Every big project, though, we're trying to do in Kansas City requires a lot of federal cash, at least at some point. That's going to be harder to come by now.
I agree. But I just have to say this. If he has a great interaction with the president, that's wonderful. But when it comes to loyalty, Donald Trump isn't very high on that.
Okay, all righty. Over the years, you may have seen T-shirts and bumper stickers that say things like Bill Self for governor or Bill Snyder for governor. Sports figures are increasingly jumping into politics. But what about Dayton Moore for governor? The former Kansas City Royals president has confirmed he's on a fact-finding trip around Kansas, weighing a possible run to succeed Laura Kelly. Sports players are big. How much of a profile, Chris Katz, does Dayton Moore have 2 years after being fired from his Royals leadership job?
I think Dayton Moore obviously gets points for things like the See You in the Major Leagues Foundation and his role in starting all of that and the positive impact that he's having, that the foundation is having on young lives. And maybe this exploration of a run for governor is perhaps an extension of that. But I just politically find it hard to believe that this is something that's going to have legs here in a few months.
You were breaking news on this, Pete, because he appeared on your program, and that launched the whole storytelling with regards to him running for governor. I, just to clarify, because a lot of reports that followed this up didn't say what political party he would be running for.
He'll be a Republican.
He would be a Republican.
If he does, yep. And he was not on my show. I broke the story. Okay. He's been a friend for a long time that he's looking at this. And, you know, I think for him, it's all about leadership. It's about the See You in the Major Leagues Foundation that he still has here in Kansas City. He lives here. It's home. And our friendship started with him being very interested in just the political scene, what's going on the Kansas side of the state line. I never thought we'd be talking about this potentially today, but here we are. And listen, I think he's a great leader. He's well-liked. And when it comes to name ID, it's really more about does he have more name ID than his opponents. And right now, there's only Scott Schwab in the race.
He is Kansas Secretary of State.
No one knows the Secretary of State. If you were to poll Kansans, maybe 10% know their Secretary of State. So he will have more name ID, I believe, than anyone else in the race, probably. And that will give him a little bit of a leg up. Yeah.
I disagree with that. I don't think people pay attention to the front office of the Kansas City Royals once you get 50 miles west of Kansas City. And he will face stiff opposition, particularly in a Republican primary, where you could have several Republicans with legislative experience on the ballot. That makes his path a little more difficult, and he would have to raise a lot of money. Now, if he does win the governorship, perhaps he could trade Kris Kobach to Colorado or Minnesota or somebody maybe for a draft choice or some cash, and in that case, he might get support of Kansas.
I should point out, by the way, Laura Kelly cannot run again. She's term limited, so she's going to be out of office in 2026 anyway. But Yvette, is it really a slam dunk, though, for a well-known sports figure to be elected?
I think it's possible, but is he as well known as he would need to be for that to be a slam dunk?
And the other thing is, it's easy to be in a public figure like that in sports. You're talking about the decisions made there. But, you know, then he's going to be interjecting himself on, you know, should care be given to transgender minors? He's going to get involved in a lot of thorny issues, and your popularity may change.
It can. But what I would just add when it comes to Dayton Moore and whether or not he can be governor, you know, you look at some of the people that are likely to run against him. What are their ties to? A Brownback administration, which Democrats have run very effectively against. Republican primary voters like outsiders. They like people who have not been in politics right now. He has not done any of that, and that will be potentially highly appealing.
And Roger the Plumber, though, ran, and he didn't do very well.
Right, and Chris Kobach was the nominee last time. He's not exactly a neophyte in Kansas politics.
When you put a program like this together every week, you can't get to every story grabbing the headlines. What was the big local story we missed?
Women's basketball phenom Caitlin Clark in town at a T-Mobile Center event. She gives her endorsement for a WNBA team in Kansas City. So there'll be no quick resolution after all to the most beleaguered piece of land in all of Kansas City. The Star reporter may take a year-long legal trial to settle the future of the Mission Gateway project. It was once home to a thriving shopping mall. It was torn down nearly 20 years ago, and they still haven't figured out what to do. Johnson County is getting serious about the World Cup, despite complaints from citizens about high taxes. The county is now spending $1.5 million on leasing a massive fleet of buses to pick up soccer fans at KCI, take them to their Kansas hotels, and ferry them to Arrowhead Stadium every 20 minutes during the month-long tournament. And while companies and governments are walking back DEI programs, the Kansas City Royals are putting their cash behind Black History Month. They're paying for everyone to visit the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum for free. You can walk into the 18th and Vine attraction without a ticket, now through the end of February.
already, Chris, did you pick one of those stories or something completely different this week?
Something completely different, and not a major story, but as we look ahead to Super Bowl Sunday in New Orleans, it's going to be a little different without George Toma there. It kind of ran afoul with the league a couple of years ago. Somebody who has had extensive experience, obviously, in Kansas City and nationwide when it comes to big events like this. And he's just a really good guy and a Kansas City, and I'll miss him.
Yvette.
Something else. So we'll see whether or not Casey Pet Project still has control of animal welfare. Frankly, I think that there needs to be, for lack of a better word, perhaps a private-public partnership between the city and Casey Pet Project to look after, to protect our animals, but also to keep us safe.
Dave.
Josh Hawley and Bernie Sanders have joined together. Amazing.
That's great bipartisanship.
That's right.
To propose a bill that would limit credit card interest rates to 10% phased in over time. Some credit card companies, as you know, charge 28, 29, 30% interest on purchases. I don't think this bill has a great chance, at least in its present form, of passing. The banks are too opposed to it. But some limit on credit card fees may be in the future.
Pete.
This week, a Kansas City radio host was potentially nearly carjacked downtown. It ties into our earlier conversation around crime. Nikki Vivas is her name, used to be a colleague. She's now with another group here in Kansas City. But it really does unfortunately highlight this happens far too frequently in downtown to too many people. This happens to be a person of somewhat local notoriety. That's why it got some legs, but certainly a big story. And it does highlight what is still going to be a major problem for the city going forward and potentially for the future of these stadiums and where they're going to be located.
And on that, we will say our week has been reviewed courtesy of the Stars' Yvette Walker and Pete Mundo, 6 to 10 weekdays on KCMO Talk Radio, 95.7 FM. From the anchor desk at KNBC 9 News, Chris Katz and Kansas City news icon Dave Helling. And I'm Nick Haynes from all of us here at Kansas City PBS. Be well, keep calm, and carry on.